Welcome back to the Gathering. Last week, Kirk, you and I were analyzing Devarim 13, Deuteronomy 13, which is one of the two tests that Yahweh provides for all of us to determine whether or not someone spoke for him. And at the center of this proposition of Yahweh providing instructions for us in the midst of his instruction book called the Torah, for all the world to know how to go about doing this, would there be any reason for him to include not one but two tests on how to determine whether or not someone was speaking for him when they claimed to be doing so, if he did not want us to use it?
Absolutely. I mean, he wants you to look at it. He said, examine every word.
So when somebody says that you have no right to question what's in the canon and determine whether or not for yourself it is the word of God, we can't pick and choose what we accept and what we reject, wouldn't that proposition be in opposition to Yahweh providing us with the basis of a test?
Well, that and the fact that the canon is a man-made thing and the Torah is God delivering it to Moses.
Correct.
And that's once totally man-made or put together, pick and choose.
Right. Now, do you think that Yahweh would have devoted better parts of two chapters of his Torah to exposing and condemning false prophets, those who claim to speak for him but do not, if this was not going to occur?
Absolutely. It would be no reason to do it if it wasn't going to occur.
So God knew for certain that people like Paul, like Muhammad, would claim to be inspired by him, would claim that their words were scripture, and that people would wonder whether or not it was true.
And the proof, once again, is he wrote the inspired Chabuk to attack Paul by name. I mean,
by name. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the condemnation in Chabuk follows right along this same test. Yeah, it was pretty consistent. He uses the Devarim test in his renunciation of Paul and Chabuk. It's something I didn't really consider, and I never made the point before. But if you look at what he writes in the Torah, in both places in the Torah, the condemnation begins with arrogance. The first thing Yahweh says about Paul is that he's arrogant. It begins right there. The second is that the test requires the individual to make a declaration to a large audience and to take a stand to establish himself. And if you look at the condemnation of Paul and Habakkuk, it defines his audience as all Gentiles, all non-Jews. And it talks about he taking this stand, acting presumptuously to establish himself. And saying things that he had no authorization. You know, here's Paul, you know, claiming to be an apostle. So it goes right on down. And then when it talks about the consequence of people trusting this man, you know, in this test, it says that this person is deadly. And what is the consequence? What does Yahweh say of Paul in the Chabuk review?
You will die with him.
Yeah.
It is a disease of death.
Yeah. It is a plague of death. Exactly right. Yeah. And so, you know, you look at the Chabuk indictment of Paul, where Yahweh 666 years exactly from the time that he provided this revelation against Paul to the time that Paul wrote this letter that we're reviewing, Galatians, exactly 666 years. That's a clue right there. That Yahweh used his own test to condemn Paul. Now, that really ought to get people's attention. And there's no one in all of human history that fits the test and the rebuke in Chabuk. For example, you might say that Rabbi Akiva, and Maimonides would be in violation of much of this. They were both egotistical. They both took a stand to establish themselves. And they both claimed to speak for God when they didn't. Now, that's even a stretch on that point, because Akiba did not claim to speak for God. He claimed to speak for rabbis. And Maimonides didn't claim to speak for God. He claimed to speak for the rabbinical religion. But in Chabaouk, it's clear that the person who is establishing themselves is addressing Gentiles.
Mm-hmm.
Did Rabbi Akiba or Maimonides, the Rambam, was their audience Gentiles?
No interest in Gentiles.
Right. So it's impossible that they can be the perpetrator when we put these two indictments together. And by the way, the conspirator to meet this has to be Jewish, because it's somebody from your midst. They have to be a Yehudim. They have to be a Yisraelite. Now, I think Muhammad actually qualifies on that, but it's hard to prove. But
yeah.
His mother came from a community where she was ostracized, where 75% of the inhabitants were Jewish.
Yathrop.
And his father also came from a community where 75% of the inhabitants were Jewish, and nothing is ever said about his father and his father's name, which probably would have implicated him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's like Hitler came. You know, Hitler came to accuse Jews of all manner of horrible things, and then sought to incarcerate and torture all those with Jewish hereditary when he himself was Jewish. You know, Stalin did the same thing. It's not uncommon for people to act this way. But the indictment is of someone in your midst, and since Muhammad probably was Jewish but did not speak in the midst of the children of Israel, he would be excluded from this.
So you're
right back to, okay, Yahweh has delineated two tests. And he has delineated a very long prophecy about a single individual. It's always, speaking of this person, it's always masculine singular. And so there's only one person who qualifies. There's only one person who, as a Jew, spoke to Gentiles while claiming to speak for God, who made enough of an impact on the world to deserve this kind of exposure in the Torah and the prophets. Only one person.
Yeah.
And by the way, Yahweh in the Habakkuk condemnation, Yahweh calls him out by name. It says his name is Shaul, which was Paul's given name.
Now, the Christians can't avoid it, even though Chabuk and a King James version, or most of the versions, are so copy-edited,
right,
that it's not real obvious until you go back to something older. But they have no excuse, because Yahusha, on the Olivet Discourse, he tells them exactly who's coming and why. I mean, they call him out by name, but he says, look.
Right.
And tells you, you know, and they will see him. So
yeah. And by the way, you know, one of the things that's always strange to me. But first of all, that condemnation was Yahusha said that when somebody claims to have seen me in the wilderness, which is the road to Damascus, claims to have seen me before everyone sees me all at once, don't follow that person. They're a liar. And that he also says that that person will deceive even the called out. And he did. I mean, he deceived and manipulated even Yosha's disciples. And so, yeah, he was incredibly well defined. In fact, in the instructional amount, you mentioned that Yosha specifically said that the wolf in sheep's clothing. Now, Paul specifically announced that he was from the tribe of Benjamin. What does Yahweh say about the tribe of Benjamin in the Torah?
They're wolves.
They're wolves.
They devour you.
Right. So he declared that he was a wolf in his two declarations. He was from the tribe of Benjamin. That the declaration of the wolf in sheep's clothing is someone who would appear to be one of them who is actually devouring them. Paul claimed to be an apostle. He claimed to be one of them, correct?
Oh, yeah.
And yet his testimony as a wolf, according to God, is deadly. And when God said what part of his mannerism would be deadly in the Sermon on the Mount, didn't he specifically say what the wolf was going to do to devour his children?
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute.
In the Sermon on the Mount, when it speaks of the wolf in sheep's clothing, you know that Yahusha didn't, you know, it's not a statement that just hangs out there on its own. Yahusha specifically told all that would listen the specific tactic that the wolf would use to be ravenous. And the specific tactic is that he would lead people away from the Torah.
And Paul said he is whatever he kind of becomes like a chameleon. You know,
exactly.
Wherever he is whatever they want him to be.
Yeah, the wolf in sheep's clothing means that he's going to pretend to be one of you when he's not. And what did Paul say in Corinthians, you know, to the...
I am, you know, when in Rome, basically, is where we get
Yeah. When I'm around those who are Torah observant, I pretend to be Torah observant even though I'm not. When I'm around those who are not Torah observant, I'm not Torah observant. And when I'm around Jews, I act Jewish. And when I'm around Gentiles, I pretend to be a Gentile. I will present myself in whichever way enables me to take advantage of those that I'm speaking to. That's what Paul confessed to. You can't have a more direct confession to being guilty of the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then you go to Yosha's proclamation through Yahochanan in Revelation, where he's talking about the false prophet, the false apostle, in Ephesus. There's only one person who has testimony that he was in opposition to Yahochanan, opposition to the disciples, who not only himself was in opposition, but positioned his posse in opposition to the disciples, to the message that Yahusha was delivering in Ephesus. Only one person.
And that's Paul, of course.
That's Paul. Now, everything that Yahusha said points to Paul. No matter where you turn, there is only one wolf in sheep's clothing that meets the criterion that Yahusha used in his Sermon on the Mount. Be aware of the wolf in sheep's clothing. Paul confessed to that crime. And Paul is the only Benjamite who specifically denounced the Torah, which is the tool that Yahusha said that the wolf in sheep's clothing would deploy, a renunciation of the Torah. Only Paul. There is no other candidate in all of human history. You know, in that same Sermon on the Mount, as you begin the Sermon on the Mount, Yahusha begins by undermining the entirety of Pauline doctrine. Pauline doctrine is based on a singular concept, which is the Torah is annulled and replaced by the gospel of grace. Who is the one that annulled the Torah and replaced it with the gospel of grace? And Paul's it. Now, if you realize that, and you realize that Yahusha said at the beginning of his Sermon on the Mount, do not think that I have come to annul the Torah. It's over for Christianity. It's over for Paul. I mean, it's at that point, it's game over. There is no way to be an informed, rational Christian. What do you think, Kirk?
Well, I think it's absolutely right. In fact, as when you went to break, I was thinking if you took Dabarim 13 and Shavuot, and then you do the Olivet Discourse, and you juxtapose that against Galatians or even Romans a little bit, I mean, you're dead in the water. You have no argument.
When Yahusha said, and I think it's the saddest line that he ever spoke, he said, I have come in my Father's name, and you don't receive me, but another will come in his own name, and he... you will accept.
Yeah.
Who could that have been other than Paul?
It's Paul.
Who amongst all of the people that we know are attributed status in terms of their writings being scriptural, who changed their name, Cain in his own name, a name that he himself chose, other than Paul?
No one.
No one. No one. And everything Paul said was the opposite of what Yahusha said. And what's the most amazing thing about Christianity is that Christians think that their religion was founded by Jesus Christ and that they're praying to him and following him and saved by him, and yet they reject everything that he said and everything that he did and believe Paul instead. And this is not close. I mean, Yahusha was Torah observant. There's not a Christian on the planet that's Torah observant.
Well, you couldn't be.
No. You can't be. No, the moment you're Torah observant, you cease to be a Christian.
Yeah, you got to pick sides. I mean.
Right.
You remember when KP said, when you were writing this the first time, and you're doing the research, and he said, well, I understand you're right on that, but if I misquote, correct me, but I understand that's true and that's true, but a lot of things he said were okay. I can use those.
Yes, did Yahweh in his test tell you that the person who falsely claims to be inspired, because God's standard to be inspired is you have to be completely accurate in the past. Paul was not. You have to be completely accurate in future prophecy. Paul was not. You have to be completely consistent with what he has said. Paul was not. You have to add nothing to and subtract nothing from what he said. Paul did both. Now, so since Paul violated all of the terms of the test, and you cannot be egotistical, and Paul was, then we know for certain that Paul failed Yahweh's inspiration test, so he was not inspired by God. What does Yahweh say about the writings of such a person? Does he say, well, you know, some of them might be good and some of them might be bad. You really should use your best judgment and determine which of the things that he says are reliable and which are not? Does he give you that filter and that advice?
No, he does not.
No, he does not. So does he say that person is potentially sickening and that maybe, you know, if you take the wrong percentage of bad versus good, you might get sick? Does he say that?
No.
No. What does he say?
He says, get rid of it. You kill an evil, you, whether you do it with words or what have you, but yeah. You still get rid of it.
He says the person is deadly.
Deadly.
He says it twice, and then he says completely reject them.
Mm-hmm.
Separate yourself from them.
Yes.
You know, when if you were to try to, Kirk, you're an artist. If you were to use your skill as an artist to try to counterfeit a $100 bill, would you try to make some of the strokes of that $100 bill in color and size and placement consistent with the authentic object?
Yeah, if you're trying not to get cold, absolutely.
All right. So some of your strokes would be accurate, would they not?
Oh, sure.
And what would the bill be worth?
It'd still be worth nothing.
Yep.
Unless I can fool you.
Yep. And even then, you'd be committing a criminal act. That's the same as Paul's letters. A little bit of truth only enhances the counterfeit. Because we're talking about the fact that it's undeniable that Yahweh and Yahusha were speaking only about Paul. And that rightly so, that Paul has deceived more people than any other person who's ever lived. There's no one anywhere close. As a matter of fact, when you consider those that Paul has influenced over time, he is far worse than the Torahless one that is feared by Christians as the Antichrist. The Antichrist will be vastly less influential than was Paul.
Well, there's going to be fewer people, too, by the time he shows up. There's going to be quite a horror going on.
In the Sermon on the Mount, as Yahusha was talking about, was debunking Pauline doctrine and saying, do not think I've come to annul or to do away with the Torah, and specifically said that every letter and every stroke of every letter of the Torah would stay intact so long as the heaven and earth existed, the antithesis of what Paul said. Did he speak of the name? Because he said, translating to Greek as the name, so it would be in Hebrew, it would be a combination of Kara and Shem, because he was speaking in Hebrew. He said that the name that will be used in heaven to describe that individual was lowly and little.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Paulos means in Latin?
I do. It's lowly and little, insignificant, small.
Yeah. Wow. You think that was just by coincidence that he stumbled on they'll be called? Because the term seems so stupid. Why would we care what the person is called in heaven that is doing the antithesis of what Yosha is saying? I wouldn't care, unless it's to identify an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And Son of a Gun, it identifies the individual.
Yeah, you have to. Everything is teaching.
So all right. In Habakkuk, does Yahweh tell us that the prophecy that he's issuing is for a long time distant?
Yes.
Does he tell us that, you know, even though this prophecy is for a long time distant, does he tell us, but you should be absolutely assured that what I tell you is going to take place just as I have told you?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't very often do that, does he? In fact, I'm not even aware of a single time where Yahweh in his prophecy said, I'm making this prophecy for a time way, way in the future, but you should be absolutely assured that it's going to materialize just as I have said. Is there any other place where he tells us that?
Well, not quite as precisely. I mean, he says, you know, that the Yehudim will return and things like that, but that's very precise. I mean,
oh, no, I'm not denying that Yahweh makes prophecies
uh-huh.
about events way in the future. And I'm not denying the fact that all of Yahweh's prophecies are precise and they come true exactly as he issued them. My question is, in Habakkuk, Yahweh specifically says that this prophecy is being provided for a period of time that is very distant in time. Does he say that of any of his other prophecies?
Not that I'm aware.
No, I'm not aware of a single place. And he gives prophecies that are way out in time, but he never tells us, you know, I want you to be aware that this prophecy is for way out in time. Because, you know, for the most part, through his prophets, he's renouncing Israelites as they are at that moment, and then predicting what he's going to do as a remedy. Now, and then what ultimately is going to happen to Israel before he reconciles his relationship. Now, the second part of that is there any other place where Yahweh tells us that this specific prophecy, even though it's way out in the future, that you should be absolutely assured that it's going to occur exactly as it's delineated?
No, he didn't really put it that way.
No?
That I'm aware of.
I don't think there's any other place he tells us that. Then the next thing he tells us is that the time that this prophecy in Chabaouk that is specifically against Shaul, Paul, is going to materialize, that this false prophet, this deadly prophet, is going to emerge at the time of the Moed.
Mm-hmm.
Does Yahweh tell us in the opening chapter of Bereshit, in the beginning of the Torah, of when the Moed would be fulfilled?
Well, he tells you when he's going to return in Daniel. I'm not sure whether...
What about the fourth day? Does the fourth day tell us that the sun and the greater and the lesser light are going to become visible as a sign of the Moed on the fourth day of creation?
Absolutely. And
yeah.
You can
yeah.
extrapolate 4,000, the year 4,000.
Yeah, year 4,000. And what happened in year 4,000, Yah?
Yosha showed up.
Yeah, Yosha didn't just show up. In year 4,000, Yah, he actually fulfilled the first four of the Moed, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, and Shavuah in year 4,000, Yah, 33 CE. When did Paul show up in Jerusalem to become a rabbinic student?
Absolutely, same time. Right.
Same
in time.
Same time.
He was there.
So Yahweh specifically references the Moed. And since the Moed occur every year, he's not going to tell you this distant individual, this distant person who is going to be come up among you. So he's going to be Jewish. And his audience is going to be Gentiles. I don't think there is a single other Jew whose principal audience was Gentiles.
No.
In the distant future, not one. But beyond that, he said that he would arise during the time of the Moed. Since the Moed occur every year, he's obviously speaking of the fulfillment of the Moed.
Very specific.
Which is, yeah, year 33 CE on the pagan Roman Catholic calendar and year 4,000 Yah.
Yeah, well, why would he show up any other time? I mean, that's the effective time, because that's when you start with the real apostles, you know, and everything
right.
is the story is told.
That's when everything that Yahweh had predicted and planned and promised that he was going to achieve to facilitate the benefits of the covenant, that's when they were accomplished, and that's when HaSatan, Satan, the adversary, would most want to annul them, to confuse people regarding them. So did Paul ever speak on behalf of Passover?
Never.
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 In fact, he even said that Passover and matzah and unyeasted bread and first fruits, that they provided no value whatsoever.
No value, no salvation. Yeah, I was playing. No good.
No good. Wow.
You got to be brave to say something like that. That's totally stupid.
Yeah, you've got to really be brave. Yeah. That's,
wow.
Yeah. So when you put this all together and you look at the timing of Paul's, or came up, his name, because in that same prophecy, Yahweh says that his name is going to be Shaul, and he's going to be the plague of death. How do you come to know that and continue to be a Christian?
I guess they just don't know the Torah, so they don't believe the Torah. If you never study the Torah, you just believe whatever you want to believe.
How can you compare what Yahusha said in the Sermon on the Mount, that do not think for a moment that I came to annul the Torah, and then he goes into great detail about the continued enforcement and effect of all of the letters that comprise the words in Hebrew of the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you have Paul annul it, and Christians believe that he spoke for God when he annulled it, and he's saying exactly the opposite of what Yahusha said. I mean, doesn't that incriminate Paul as the person who would come in his own name that they would receive, and they would not receive Yahusha, even though he came in their father's name? In fact, do Christians go so far as to believe Paul over Yahusha? But also, they renamed Yahusha so that he was not even in his father's name.
You know, I was thinking the other day, too, in relation to similar to this, in that Yahweh, you know, they say Yahweh or Jesus fulfilled all these things, so we don't have to do it anymore yet. And yet we talked a minute about Yahweh was totally Torah and observant. But, you know, the temple didn't end to 70 CE.
Correct.
And all the apostles continued to be Torah observant.
Correct.
The whole time.
Correct.
I mean, what does that tell you?
Well, first of all, when a Christian says that to fulfill means to do away with, then what I would do, I would say two things. One is that, all right, so if I loan you money, and I say I have fulfilled my obligation because I just claiming that I fulfilled my obligation, but I don't pay you back. Would that end the obligation?
No, I think it might go to small claims court, or at least.
You know, when a Christian claims that he meant to fulfill means that he did away with. If you owe me $1,000 and you say I have fulfilled the obligation by doing away with the obligation to pay me back, would any rational person think, well, you fulfilled it by doing away with it as opposed to honoring it and paying me?
Yeah.
Of course not. Now, also, if you're claiming that it means fulfill, that fulfill means to do away with, then why in context do you have to ignore the fact that Yahusha said, do not think that I have done away with it? He begins it by saying, don't think that I've done away with it, and then your conclusion is to fulfill means to do away with? Do you think that your Jesus, put that in air quotes, was a self-contradicting boob? And when you read in context, and he says, he goes into detail to explain what it means when he says, don't think I came to annul or do away with, by saying every jot which is Yod, the smallest letter, that would be the first letter in Yahweh's name. The first letter in Yahuda, the first letter in his name, Yahusha, that every Yod and every tittle, which are the strokes on the Hebrew letters that comprise the Hebrew letters, that every jot and every tittle would remain in effect so long as the heaven and earth exist. Doesn't that completely negate any possibility of fulfill means to do away with?
It's just no debate at that point. I mean, you have to be ridiculous to debate this.
Right. So why is it that Christians will respond to fulfill means to do away with when in context of Yahusha's own words, that's an impossible conclusion?
Mm-hmm. Well, you just parrot your preacher.
You just take things out of context.
Sure.
You twist them to suit your religious faith, and you don't consider anything beyond that. So if a Christian soul ceases to exist, which all do, who do they have to blame?
You always blame yourself.
Yeah, that's who's going to be held accountable. The truth is available. All they had to do is look at the words of Yahusha. This notion that Christians worship God in the name of Jesus Christ and that their religion was founded by Jesus Christ is absolutely preposterous. If I were to claim to speak for you and never quote a single thing that you've ever said, would that be credible?
You'd be a phony.
Yeah. But is that what Paul did? Claim to speak for Yahusha and never cited a single thing from him?
Well, that was my problem. Even when a Christian, I couldn't find any red letters. You know, the red letter editions.
Yeah, Yahusha's words were always in red. And you don't find a single red letter, any one of Paul's letters. It's 13 letters. Claims to speak for Yahusha and doesn't quote him once.
Now, I'm using that in connection with every time Yahweh spoke, he spoke the Torah.
Right. Yeah, here's Yahusha, and he's constantly quoting Yahweh. Yeah, constantly quoting Yahweh, which is himself. But, yeah, constantly. And does Paul ever accurately cite the Torah?
Not once it's found.
Not once. Not even once.
Let me ask you a question, Yahweh.
Sure.
Uh-huh. So much opposition to Yahweh's plan, and...
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody may not be want to study the Torah every day. I've grown to just love it. I mean, I truly am.
Me too.
I mean,
yeah.
But what is so bad or so tough about his plan? I mean, you have to give up Christmas? I mean, is that the biggest thing in your life? I mean,
you have to give up going to church?
Church?
You have to give up Sunday worship, if you have worship.
Yeah,
I mean that.
Did qualify you? Join the Rotarians. Hell,
I think I can provide insight on that.
Yeah,
it's you actually have to do the work. You actually have to do the work and participate in it.
Yeah,
and it's something.
It ain't work. It really isn't work.
No, but that's why though. That's why. Why? But, so you have to study. You have to put the time aside, and you have to read. And then when you're doing it,
heaven forbid that you actually have to come to know the God that you're asking to save you.
Exactly.
Heaven forbid you'd have to get to know him. But, heaven forbid you'd actually have to figure out what he wants and what he's desirous of us. Before you expect him to save you.
But there's other things that go into it. Christianity is easy. I was not religious, but I could tell you about Christianity. It's easy.
Yeah.
Everybody
believe.
Talks about it. Everybody knows it. There's not anybody in the world that doesn't know the story of Christianity.
Right.
The other thing is that because everybody knows it, a lot of people accept it. So now when you read, you start to learn about this great person that gives us everything. It gives us everything, you know, and it's much more fantastic than the Christianity. But now you're running into people that, you know,
you're going against
the current.
You're rolling up a waterfall, right?
But that's why.
Actually, you're floating down the greatest, most scenic waterway in the world, and a ark provided by the creator of the universe, but to the rest of the world, you're seen rolling up a waterfall. Yeah.
So that's why.
But you know, it takes a. There's so much to it, though, Kirk. I think too, and Scott, is that first you've got to get over the idea that religions are a path to God. That they have merit and that they're godly. So that's the first. I mean, that's hard in our culture. So you've got to disassociate religion and God and actually look religion as a hostile act towards God. That's hard for people to do. And then the next thing you've got to do is go to a book that many people think is the foundation of the Jewish religion. It isn't. The Talmud is. The Torah. And look to it for guidance about who God is and what he's offering. That's hard for people. Then you've got to get over this religious misconception that the Torah is written to be a set of arcane laws which have no relevance today. Now, do you enjoy the Torah? Because it's a bunch of laws that you're seeking to obey, and you just can't wait to find the next law to obey?
Not at all.
No. What does Torah mean?
It's teaching, instruction, guidance, direction.
Right. And who is the individual supplying the teaching and the guidance and the direction?
Our real Father.
Yeah. Creator of the universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have you found that any of his guidance is harsh, inappropriate, counterproductive, difficult?
No, most of it is quite fun. You get to have 7 holidays a year.
Yeah, you do. And you get to meet with God himself during those holidays.
He shows up.
Yeah. Yeah, and their parties.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's absolutely. And he's invited us to these parties. Well, we're invitees, we're welcomed guests as his parties, and the benefit of all of this is you get to be adopted,
yeah,
by that Heavenly Father, by God, and it's the most awesome deal in the world. It's just astonishing that so few people accept it. We'll be back tomorrow.